We'll begin Bezrat Hashem. We're going to continue our discussion of Shaul HaMelech. I think we have another, perhaps 2 weeks on this. Let's see. We concluded last week with Shaul receiving the verdict that he's going to be losing the Malacha, the Malucha. And basically, what happens now is we now move on to the very well-known phenomenon, saga of Shaul's pursuit of David. And that starts in stages and it also escalates in stages. And it brings out more about David than about Shaul, as we'll see. But now, in the context of our discussion here, we're going to be focusing more on Shaul. So it starts with the following. Sorry, give me a minute. It starts with the following. The Navi tells us that from that point on, the Ruach of Hashem departed from Shaul. You remember when Shaul was anointed king, we said that a special Ruach Hashem came upon him and imbued him with a certain supernatural level of confidence, of bravery. It was full of the Ruach of Hashem, Ruach, like we say in the Tefillah and the Yom Ne'aron, Ruach Chochmah Bina, Ruach Eitzel Gvura, Ruach Das V'Yiras Hashem. And now that it departed, so when a person has this Ruach and then it goes away, you don't just revert back to what you were before, but that leaves a person with a very great void and worse. So it says that at this point, he was overtaken by a ruach ra'ah, Me'ez Hashem, by, we'll just translate that literally, a bad spirit from Hashem. This was a certain melancholy, a certain, more than a depression. Rashi says it was to the extent that it mamish affected his, it affected his thinking, it affected his. Now, as we're going to be moving along here, we want to be very, very conscious of the fact that we are talking about a man of immense greatness, a man who is so great that we have to be very, very careful. We have to realize that we're dealing with live electricity here. That when even David HaMelech expressed, in the midst of his problems with Shaul, had to be very careful about the way he worded himself about Shaul. See that Hashem responded sharply if David, who was the, with all of his piety, expressed himself with in the wrong way. So we want to be very careful here, and all we're doing here, we want to keep conscious of the fact that we're dealing with the greatest of the great here, and we're going to be trying to learn the lessons that the Navi is conveying to us through his story. But this is what we're told: this Ruach Ra came upon him that very much affected him, that very much affected him in a terrible way. And which also, as the Mefarshim point out all along, to a large extent, I'm trying to actually see. Rashi, just a minute. Okay. And this also puts into perspective all of his oppression of David. It was not coming from a place of his. Of the real him, of the real him. It was coming from a place of this ruach ra'ah that overtook him. So what happens? Let's see. But first, again, at this point, Shaul doesn't know David. Shaul doesn't know David. He's just overtaken by this ruach ra'ah. And the eitzah that he received was try to find someone who can play beautifully with a harp. And that'll improve your mood. And a recommendation that he got was David, the son of Yishai. David comes to Shaul. This is the first time they're meeting, and there's no animosity yet. right? David comes to Shaul, and actually what happens is that Shaul really, really loved David. He became very, very attached to him and very, very impressed by him. And not only he came here to serve a very specific role to be playing music for Shaul in order to improve his mood, but Shaul was so taken by David and was so enamored by him that he actually moved him into a position of what we call the Noisei Kelim. He became his most personal attendant. It was his arms carrier, which basically meant that he was right with him, doing everything with him. Shaul wanted to have David close to him all the time, and of course, David also played that role of playing the music when it would be needed to relieve Shaul of his ruach ra.
We talked before when David came to be anointed, I guess by Shmuel, right? He was a shepherd.
That's right.
So, what did he? When did this happen?
He
Like,
was a shepherd at this point.
he was a shepherd and he was running around with
Oh, no.
Shaul.
So at this point, he was taken from the herds, from the sheep to Shaul's palace. This is the point.
As king yet.
He has on the spiritual level. I mean, Shmuel already anointed him secretly. He was secretly the king at this point. Just nobody knew it except Shmuel. And David had no interest in advertising that, right? Halachically, on the technical level, he wasn't yet the king.
But
Yet,
he'd already been appointed
yes, he'd
by
have been anointed. In terms of the spirituality of it, in terms of the Ruach Hashem, it was now by David and not by Shaul. Okay?
And Shaul couldn't pick up the David habit, even though he was by his side all the
Well, let's see.
time. Oh, okay.
Let's see. This is going to be part of the problem. Let's see. Let's see. David knew. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Shaul didn't know.
Shaul did not
He did
know.
not know
No,
that
no.
David had been anointed.
That's right. He had been told by Shmuel, Hashem has chosen somebody else. But he had no idea that anything had actually taken place in Israel. So what happens? David is now Shaul's closest attendant. And then comes the very famous story of Goliath. It was a battle of the Plishtim. Plishtim gathered for battle. Now let's understand the significance of this itself. The Yehoshaphat had very recently laid the Plishtim low. The Plishtim now came back with a new bravery. It was all in the air that there was something with Shaul that wasn't the same, meaning he had reached a place where he became the terror of all the surrounding nations, and everybody was just trying to keep a distance from Shaul. Now we suddenly see the Plishtim are coming back with renewed courage to take Shaul on because there was a certain sense of there's something different now with Shaul. He doesn't have the same power. He doesn't have the same. It was something clear about the vibe, if we'll call it that. And again, we're going to cut through the story because this is more about David here. From this point on, the stories of David and Shaul are very much intertwined, and there's an awful lot about David going on here. But we're going to cut through that. Right now, I want to focus on Shaul's side of things. But what happens is that they're up against the Plishtim. And you have Goliath who's terrorizing the Jewish camp, and David, this youth who they just pulled him from being a shepherd, like you said, and now he became Shaul's arms carrier. But all of a sudden, he's there volunteering to go face off against the man who all the Jewish warriors are being scared off by. And so David volunteers. Shaul says, "You've never been trained for battle. This is not for you." And David, again, we're not going to go through it now, but Lemaisa David steps in for the job. And here, from this point and on, things start happening that are more and more going to make Shaul feel threatened. But we're going to see it starts escalating and escalating and escalating. And there's almost like two directions. Let's see what happens. Let's see how one thing leads to the next. So David is getting ready to go out to fight Goliath. And Shaul takes off his armor to put it on David. Now, Shaul was a very tall man. His armor wasn't a standard fit. But as he put it on David, it miraculously fit him. The king's armor miraculously fit David. David and Shaul both sensed this at the same time. So David immediately said, Shaul already got a certain, right? And David also sensed this at the same time. And as he's putting it on, he says, this armor is not going to work for me. And he kind of just tries to get it off as quickly as possible so as to avoid arousing that. David was very not the man to be putting himself out there. And he ends up going against Goliath without any armor. But that little effect was already there. There was that certain effect. But then it gets worse. Why? What happens? David, we know the story. He kills Goliath. He comes back as the hero. At this point, what happens is that they came back from the battle. They came back from the battle, and songs about the battle were composed. And one of the songs had the following words in it. Shaul, up till now, was the hero of Klal Yisrael, but now David is emerging. It's after that also that the battle continued. The killing of Goliath sparked the battle, and David then emerged as the one who was leading the forces. Again, this boy who went with his slingshot, and everybody's worrying, how can he threaten this giant? Then, as the battle then ensued, David, again, without armor and with his slingshot, is leading the forces against the Pelishtim and smiting them. So, oh, that's right. That's right. That's what comes now. This is what further accelerated the trouble. There started being songs about the battle, and among this, in the words that they sang were, as you just said, Hika. Shaul smote his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Meaning David now emerged as the greater hero. Okay, this is already the next step in the dynamics. And
Shove it, stand.
how old was David at this point? I would have to work the mathematics backward. Bli Nether, if you send me an email, I'll try to make the calculations.
You know that?
No,
No.
I'd have to do the math. I'd
Oh.
have to do the math. I'd have to
Okay.
work backward from his death till he
Oh,
became king, and then back from there. Okay. Okay. So, at this point already, the Mefarshim say the thought actually did enter Shaul's mind: is this the man that Shmuel was referring to? And therefore, here the pasuk already says he was already more than just a little twin. It says, "Vayhi Shaul ayin es David me'ayim ahu." From that day on, Shaul was viewing David negatively. It doesn't yet say that he saw him as an absolute threat. Doesn't yet say that he wanted to kill him. But from this day on, his attitude about David changed. He's starting to look at him with a resentful eye. At the same time, another thing happens, which is you see these little pieces that just keep contributing to the escalation, was that Yohanan, the other hero of Klal Yisrael, and a very great man in his own right, his love for David started escalating, and this too, bothered Shaul. Okay. And not only that, the people around Shaul, everybody around Shaul is starting to admire David. So this is really not good for the relationship and the dynamic. So what happens? Here it starts escalating. And shortly after that, David was once again playing for Shaul, and all of a sudden Shaul was hit by a certain wave of that Ruach Ra, and he threw his spear at David. Now, David didn't even realize it. Shaul, in some impulse, just threw his spear at David. Now, Shaul was a trained warrior. He should have hit him. But as David was playing the harp, and he was so involved that he didn't notice what happened, he twisted and swerved as he's playing twice, and Shaul's spear missed him twice, which was very uncanny.
Shaul went and picked it up again and then threw it
Yeah.
again.
Yeah,
And it's like
either that or
clueless.
he had two next to him, I don't know,
Oh.
but he took two shots at him, both of which missed, and we're talking about a top-notch warrior.
If he had a rough run, he's to blame for.
No, that's part of the point. The Mefarshim point this out, and this is an important point to stress. We do not find him blamed for his oppression of David. He was acting in a state that, like we said, that's why I said it very gently earlier, but he was not, it wasn't him. This was not Shaul acting himself. And that's why the Mefarshim stress different mistakes of Shaul are pointed out. He's blamed for different things. He's blamed for different things. But his oppression of David is not one of them. Oppression of David is not one of them because this really came from the direct effect of the Ruach Ra. That was how Hashem, the Navi, did not hold him accountable for that.
It makes sense because he knew he didn't have the Kedusha, the special anymore, and he knew he was on his way up. He knew there would be someone.
That's right. That's
It
right.
doesn't make sense.
That he would
I mean,
be.
he knew he would have to step aside.
Right. That's right.
It doesn't make
Well, I'll
sense.
still say that that's very difficult to swallow, but
Yes,
yet,
but
that's right. Yes.
still,
Yeah.
a lot of things are hard to swallow, but sometimes,
Right.
and to
Right.
think someone has agreed to show. Even without, I mean, he's the one that was chosen to be given this. He should have, he would have normally, I think, overlapped with
In a normal situation, right, we
someone.
can definitely assume that it would have looked different. Yeah. Okay, so at this point, after this happens, David is oblivious somehow. He didn't realize what happened, but Shaul did. So at this point, his resentfulness of David actually moved into fear. It started because he sees how David is mamish being uncannily protected from him. So now we have the resentfulness builds its way into a combination of fear. And now Shaul just can't bear to have David around him anymore. So what does Shaul do? Shaul says, okay, his official statement is, you know what? You're not going to be my personal attendant anymore. I'm going to make you a commander over a unit of the army. He moved him out officially to become a commander in the army, made him a Sar Elef, a commander of a unit of 1,000. What happens as a result? And here it's just kind of like Lahavdil, Lahavdil, Lahavdil. That you see, we're going to be seeing in the Megillah how every step that Haman takes to better his own situation is just leading him toward. So here we're going to see how every step that Shaul takes at this point to try to, well, either get rid of David or to move him off the scene is really just going to be contributing to David's prestige moving up and escalating. So what happens now? That's coming up. That's coming up. Let's see. So what does Shaul do? He doesn't want him close to him anymore. It's actually kind of a demotion, right? He was the closest attendant to the king. Now he becomes a commander. But what happens now? Now he's mamish with the people, leading them, and they're exposed to him on a regular basis. So Vayihi David l'kol d'roch of maskil v'Hashem imoy. Now his siyata dishmaya that's starting to mamish characterize every step he takes is now out in the open. And as a leader, Shaul moved him into a leadership position, whereas before he wasn't. And Shaul sees his popularity escalating. He's getting more and more nervous of David. While meanwhile, Kol Yisrael v'Yehuda is David. David's popularity among the people, he's becoming more and more admired, even though, again, he's not trying to do this. He's not trying to do this, but this is the reality that's happening. So what does Shaul do now? So Shaul decides, okay, maybe I can get him even further out into the battlefield. So basically, Shaul kind of comes and presents it to David kind of as a promotion. He says, I want you now to become my son-in-law. I want you to marry my daughter, his daughter Merav, his older daughter. But as a result, I want you to really step up in terms of commanding the army. Up till now, you were in charge of a unit of 1,000. I want you to move into an even higher position of command, with his true motive being, Alti Yodi Bai, let the Pelishtim take care of David instead of me. That was his real motive. But at the same time, Shaul's working with such a conflict of different emotions here that he ends up just taking Merav and giving her to a different man.
Why did Shaul want the marriage?
So we have to assume usually people wouldn't deal with their enemies by marrying him off to his daughter so that he'll end up getting killed,
Handle the
unless he knows.
marriages.
But with all that, that's right. We must say that this all is a function of, again, the Ruach Ra. This is all the Ruach Ra at play. This is all the Ruach Ra at play.
Who does Merav marry?
A man by the name of Adriel HaMecholasi. So what exactly happened there? Apparently, this is mamish again, Shaul with his mixture of emotions, says he's going to give it to David, can't get himself to do that, ends up giving her to somebody else. What happens then? Nothing.
Supposed to get from
We don't
that.
learn anything from Shaul. What we do learn is from what was going on around Shaul. We see Hashem guiding things. And the truth is that we learn a lot about David. Now, as I said before, we're not going to be putting that much focus on this on David's story here. But a lot of this is really a story about David. And maybe we'll come back to that from a different angle. But right now we're focused on Shaul. And we'll see, there will be things to learn. No, from his behavior at the time of Ruach Ra, no, that's not anything we're learning from here.
We say Ruach Ra applies today, that you can see people acting badly and it's Ruach Ra, or this is a once in a history
Oh, there
exception.
certainly is such a thing, just that, it takes Hashem to decide. I would say that this is actually a little bit of a dangerous topic to discuss now because people are, on the contrary, in today's day and age, people are very quick to apply this. This dispensation, right? So that's why we want to be dealing with it with care. The Navi said that this was the result of Ruach Ra. We have all kinds of people out there doing all kinds of things. There's no question that in many cases, there's a lot of Ruach Ra out there today. There's a lot of Ruach Ra out there today. Yet we can't apply it as an all-encompassing dispensation for any form of behavior.
When the leader is a puppet, some there is a issue there, no?
Yes, the leaders, in terms of decisions that affect all of Klal Yisrael, in that sense, we view them as puppets. But I'm talking more about just in general what we see around us. Yeah. Okay. So what happens next? What happens then is that the next stage of it is that David ends up marrying Shaul's second daughter. Shaul's second daughter, Michal. Michal proved to be a very, very loyal wife to David. And here, once again, this moved Shaul's plans in backward direction. Shaul, again, his motive in marrying David off to his daughter was in order to be able to set him up better. Now, Michal becomes David's very, very loyal wife. And she ends up becoming an important part of foiling Shaul's plans against David. So you have Yehonasan on the one hand, right, Shaul's son, and you have Michal, who's now Shaul's wife, Shaul's daughter, are now both with David, foiling Shaul's plots. So, what happens? Each of these incidents is making it, when Shaul sees how attached Michal is to David, he was thinking, oh no, she's just going to be a plant, she'll be a. It shall be, it doesn't work again. It doesn't work that way. But whatever it is, each incident is making Shaul see more and more how every step he's taking is just working against him and enhancing David's influence, enhancing his power, enhancing his popularity. And it says Shaul's fear and enmity toward David is really starting to step up until at this point it reaches a place where it just becomes fixed and permanent. If up till now it was fluctuating, at this point it just becomes fixed and permanent. And we'll still see fluctuations, but it was rather than just ups and downs and ups and downs, now that becomes the standard state of affairs. Okay. I'm not going to go through all the different details here, but there are some more ins and outs of both Yoinasan and Michal trying to have their influence. Shaul's enmity toward David is just getting worse and worse until it becomes very clear that this is it. Shaul is intent on killing David. Yehonasan is actually the one who goes and clarifies that, has a discussion with Shaul. Shaul threatened Yehonasan and cursed him. And then Yehonasan says, sees very clearly, okay, this is how it is. He tells that to David. Michal helps him escape. And now David understands that he's a fugitive. That's it. He's off the scene. He's a fugitive at this point. I want to stress one more thing about Yehonasan, and that is that Yehonasan at this point, it's not just that he loved David, but Yehonasan already reached that very clear realization that this is the man who Hashem intended. Now let's remember another thing. Yehonasan was the crown prince. Yehonasan was the crown prince. He is the man who is actually destined, officially in line to become the king after Shaul. And yet, Yehonasan, in his own piety, he clearly recognizes the Yad Hashem and everything going on with David. He identifies David as the man who Hashem has in mind, and he is totally now submitting himself to David, even though not in an official kind of way. But he is actually out there to help David save his life and make statements to David a number of times. You are going to become the king. I will be operating under you. There will always be a treaty of friendship. I'll be protecting you now. Afterwards, there will be a treaty of friendship between us, etc. Once again, much to Shaul's dismay and resentment. It's after this that we have the story of Noivir HaKohanim that we discussed. And back and forth, ins and outs, until we get to a certain poignant incident between Shaul and David. After a whole bunch, many more series of Shaul's attempts to kill him, and David, at this point, mamash living as a fugitive, fleeing from place to place, can't be settled in Eretz Yisrael. But then we reach a certain poignant incident, and here I want to slow down and focus on this incident, famous incident, but let's see it in detail. Shaul, at one point, was mamash had David cornered, but then the Plishtim came for another attack. Shaul had to go back to fight them off. Fine. But now Shaul basically, whenever he's not being distracted by wars with the Plishtim and everything, he's basically, his life now is dedicated to one cause, pursuing David and catching him. In an uncanny kind of way, kings usually didn't embark personally on these pursuits, right? They had their army. Shaul himself is joining the forces, chasing David from here to there, etc. Okay. So what happens now? Then we reach a certain poignant incident. At one point, Shaul receives word that David is hiding out in the desert in Ein Gedi. Shaul takes a force of 3,000 people and goes to chase David. He comes to a place called Gidrois Tzion, meaning here is where there's going to be the closest encounter between Shaul and David that there has been up till now. He comes to a place called Gidrois Tzion, which means what? Literally, it means fences of sheep, meaning this was a cave kind of at the side of the road that was often used by shepherds to relax, etc. And that's why David figured that this is a safe place for him to hide because Shaul won't assume he's hiding here. He went into the deeper crevices of this cave. And he was hiding, he'd been in these caves. It's not like there's all kinds of twists and ins and outs. David went all the way into the crevices of the cave, and he's hiding there, figuring that this is not a place where Shaul is now searching the desert with his men. He's not going to search here because this is known to be a public place. He wouldn't think that David would hide in a publicish place. Okay. But what happens? What happens? Shaul is with his men. David is hiding in there. With his men, mind you, okay? These caves were often huge, cavernous. He's all the way inside some crevice with his men, small band of men. And Shaul is looking for a place to relieve himself. Shaul was looking for a place to relieve himself, so he decided he's going to go into this cave and find a quiet crevice, quiet corner to relieve himself. So Chazal tell us that here there were a few Gidarim, we call it Gidrois Tzion. This place was called Fences of Sheep. Chazal say that there was a deeper significance to this name, fences. There were a few fences, not Chazal, this is Ramosha David Valley. There were a few fences that Hashem had in place here to protect the David and Shaul from each other and from themselves. What do we mean by from themselves? From each other, that they shouldn't kill each other, and from themselves, meaning that they shouldn't do themselves in by killing the other. So first of all, this was what's happening. Shaul is coming in, looking for a private place. He finds himself a quiet corner. Right there, a bit deeper in the crevice, is where David and all of his men are. And all of a sudden, they see Shaul coming in by himself. Now, this was a manifestation of Shaul's extreme tzmius. Didn't take any men with him. He didn't take any men with him. He came in by himself. And as he's setting up to relieve himself, says Shaul was noted for his tzmius. And even though he's by himself in the cave, he acted with extreme tzmius. If you remember, there's the Shulchan Aruch, right? The Ramah, right at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, said that a person shows his Yiras Shamayim, his awareness of Hashem's presence, by acting with tzniyus, with a certain bashfulness, even when he's completely on his own. And this manifests in the bathroom. The person doesn't just whatever. And Shaul here was acting, he was making a point. And here, David and his men are sitting in the right behind, and they're seeing what's going on. But Shaul is taking extra pains to keep his body as unexposed as possible while he needs to relieve himself. So he, as far as he's concerned, he's on his own. There's nobody else in the area. And meanwhile, David and his men are mamish right there. And some of David's men say to him, some of David's men say to him, "Wow, this is your chance. He's trying to kill you. He has a din of a roidiv. This is your chance to kill him." So David gets up. So first David says to them, "No." And here's where we're seeing the different characters working with each other. David says to them, "Chalila chai Hashem." He says, "I would never kill a man anointed by Hashem." And not only that, he forbade his men and held them back from going after Shaul. Now, these men, it wasn't just that they were there out of loyalty to David. Their own lives were in danger also. And they felt like David was putting them all at risk. And they were applying intense pressure on him to kill Shaul. So now, picture the situation David is in. On one hand, he has Shaul, who wants his life, right out there. As his men who are pressuring him to kill Shaul, he's able to do it. And it says that the Chazal tell us, describe how at this point, David put himself into a place of Shaul here, my men here, they're pushing him, not in a polite kind of way, right? He says, "Now this is just going to be about me and Hashem right now. He's the only one I'm going to be dealing with right now. I'm not going to be pressured by my men. I'm not going to be pressured by my fear of Shaul." He tells his men, "I'm going to deal with this myself." And Chazal say that it was at this point when he said the famous Perek of Tehillim, Maskil David b'Yosef b'Maoros Tefila. He said, as David was standing there, looking at Shaul, with his men pressuring from the back, well, I don't know if he closed his eyes, but figuratively at least, he put himself into his own world, and says that David now reached a certain clarity. Now, David was the man of Tefila his entire life. But this moment brought him to a place of the only means of survival, spiritually and physically, is tefillah. And he put in a tefillah. One of the biggest tefillahs of his life, and this is of a man whose whole life was tefillah. And what does he say? So what it says, that's why it says, Maskil David b'Yosef b'Maoros Tefila. Maskil is an interesting term for a mizmar. Maskil literally means he had he became enlightened, right? It's Milashin Seichel, Maskil is an enlightened person, a person who gained deeper insight. So it says Maskil David. This is when the crutch of tefillah really hit him. Now again, we're talking about the man who was one of the all stars of tefillah beforehand, right? But he reached a whole new level of appreciation that tefillah is the only realm where I can navigate my life. And Bama'ara Tefillah, it was in this cave, but this cave for him just became a reality of tefillah. So now I just have to be swimming in my own tefillah, not to be affected by any of the different, the pressure of the moment, the fear of Shaul, the pressure of my men. And then he goes on and says, Kodi El Hashem Ezok, Kodi El Hashem Ezchanan. Two expressions of David pleading to Hashem. And what are these two expressions of tefillah? David is about to run a very dangerous tightrope here, where he's holding his men back forcefully. He's going to go out by himself to sneak up on Shaul. And he davens to Hashem now. Doesn't know how it's going to play out. He has a plan. He has a plan to get sneak up on Shaul, not kill him, and get Shaul not to kill him either. So he davens to Hashem and he says, He says it feel in both directions. I'm pleading to you, Hashem, that with the dangerous step I'm about to take, that I don't fall into his hand, and please give me the aid that I also don't end up killing him. That's the tefillah that he's putting in here. Help me in the step I'm about to take. A very dangerous step in both directions. It says, David says, I look around, no one's going to help me now. My men are not going to help me with this. They're upset about what I'm doing. Shaul's men are not going to help me here. Even if I go to great measures to save his life, they're just going to be inciting Shaul against me. This is just about me and Hashem here. There's nowhere else. There's nowhere else I have to turn. And that's how David then moves out. And what does he do? He sneaks up behind Shaul and surgically takes hold. Again, Shaul's in the middle of relieving himself, doesn't realize how David is mamish stealthily creeping up behind him, takes hold of his coat, Shaul's coat, without David feeling it, and cuts off a little piece. Shaul feels nothing, is totally unaware of what's happening. David is operating very surgically and steals back into the cave, back into the crevices. Shaul, meanwhile, with all this drama that's surrounding him, he's totally, literally, in the dark. He came in, found a quiet corner, did what he needed to do, went back out. He has no idea about what just transpired. He has no idea that the back of his coat is now missing a tiny little piece. And here, David leaves. Sorry, Shaul leaves. David is holding his men back. Once Shaul is at a safe distance away, David steps out and calls out. And here he says to him, "Look, look what I have in my hand. Look what I have in my hand. You were in my hand. If you see, it would have been simpler for me to kill you than to cut this piece of coat off like this. Do you see how you've been incited against me unjustly? Do you see how I'm not out to get you or to do anything to you? Let Hashem judge between the two of us. If anything happens to me," David says, "if anything evil happens to me, realize that Hashem orchestrates evil through the hands of the evil. Do you want to be the man in that position?" He's talking to him strongly, but at the same time with that humility, with that anava. And he says, "You're the king of Yisrael. You're personally embarked on this mission to kill who?" David says, "Achrei kelev meis, achrei parish echad." You're chasing a dead dog, a flea. And David finishes his little piece. And Shaul, again, let's remember, Shaul was not an evil man. That's for Shaul. I don't even want to see those words, right? But Shaul sees what's happening and he starts weeping. See the struggle, the conflict that Shaul is in. He starts weeping and he says, "My son David, you're right. Tzadik atamimeni. Tzadik atamimeni. You're the righteous one here. I've been trying to deal you evil. Hashem put me into your hands and you didn't take advantage of it." And Shaul then goes and tells David, this incident is going to be a historic one. People will always be relating to this as an incident of a person who repaid evil with good. And then Shaul makes the following statement. He says, "Okay, I'm now acknowledging, I see clearly that you are going to be the next king of Klal Yisrael. I see it in your Siyata Dishmaya. I see it in your discipline. The true leader is the man who has absolute discipline over himself, and then he takes that very same discipline and implements it, imposes it on the rest of the people." And he also says, "I also see it for the fact that you tore my garment, because if you remember, when Shaul and Shmuel had their last encounter, Shaul grabbed hold of Shmuel's garment and tore it, and Shmuel said, 'Well, this is the sign and the manner in which you're going to see Hashem tearing the kingdom away from you.'" So Shaul says, "I see Hashem has destined you as the next king. You're going to have that Siyata Dishmaya. You're going to have that Hatzlacha. Now let's just make an agreement of peace between my family and your family. And I've changed." And that's how that incident ends. And we wish
That,
it were happily ever after, but that was not to be. Okay. We'll see you next week.
So when did he encounter? Was he out of the cave when did
Yeah,
he
it was already out of it was Shaul had already left the cave, was already a distance away. David waited until he was a safe enough distance away And then he stepped out in the desert, voices can carry. In the
Okay.
desert,
Where was Shaul's men? He wasn't with
he
his
wasn't
men.
yet with his men, right? And David called from a distance. And it says that Taka afterwards, Chazal say that indeed, as David was afraid, once Shaul got back to the camp, his men told him he was really scared, this, that. They got him back onto the
Killed David.
onto the track of the animosity, as we'll see in Mid-Session.
Everything you previously said that the Plishtim noticed when things were not anymore like